morning.
February 20th, 2003, and the time is 8:40. Hereby call to order the House Committee on Environment and Land Use. We're going to start by opening a work session on House Bill 2158. Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2158 revised the intent of the Legislative Assembly regarding state recycling programs and authorized the Department of Administrative Services to contract out as necessary for recycling products collected for recycling by state government. It deletes a requirement for a separate recycling plan for the Legislative Assembly and declares provisions or deletes provisions concerning use of revenues or savings realized from recycling programs. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this has subsequent referral to Ways and Means. I have noticed from both the Legislative Revenue Office dated January 14th and the Legislative Fiscal Office dated February 14th that there is no expenditure impact and no revenue impact on this measure. If the chair wishes to request that the subsequent referral be rescinded, that would need to be part of the motion, Mr. Chair.
Do we have any discussion on House Bill 2158?
Ray, the purpose is just to clarify this and make it more, take away the old planning thing and put the more specific things on 16 through 21. Is that basically what it does?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, it updates updates statutory language, and it allows for the contracting out of recycling services. So really it is an update of what's going on.
Any further discussion? Do we have a motion to not refer this bill to Ways and Means?
So move. I make a motion that we not refer this bill to Ways and Means. And House Bill 2158.
So we need to rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. A motion has been made. Is there a discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, we shall rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. And now the chair would welcome a motion on the bill.
I move we approve Bill 2158 for submission, for moving it to the House with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Greenlick has moved 2158 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? The chair, seeing none, would ask for a roll call.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Greenlick.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative
Atkins. Aye.
Representative Conner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Gerard.
Aye. Committee has unanimously voted House Bill 2158 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do we have a volunteer to be a carrier? That's almost a dirty word.
Consent.
A carrier. You know?
Consent.
Can we do a consent?
Yes, if we had a motion. Dan, are you making a...
Happy with that.
Representative Doyle is making a motion that we put House Bill 2158 on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Any objections? The chair is seeing none. Would again ask, we have no objection, so House Bill 2158 will be placed on the consent calendar. And we close the work session on House Bill 2158. We have on our agenda, committee members, we have House Bill 2545 scheduled for today. I was informed yesterday that this bill still needs a little more work before they come before us, so we will delay hearing 2545 today. But now we'll move back to the schedule and open a public hearing on House Bill 2546. Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2546 deletes the requirement that government fleet vehicles annually certify compliance with pollution control equipment. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, according to the fiscal statement that I've received from the Legislative Fiscal Office, the 0305 is a savings of $8,635, as is the 0507. For Department of Administrative Services, for Department of Transportation, and the Personal Service Other Funds, there's a savings of $4,600 in 0305, $56 and 0507. Under the Services and Supplies Other Funds, there's $3,700 in both 0305 and 0507 for a total savings in 0305 for the Department of Transportation of $8,300 and 0507, $9,300. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, DAS states that if this measure passes, it would go from performing its tests every year to performing them biennially, and that's where the 50% savings in emissions tests would come in. It's my understanding, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that this measure essentially affects three areas of the state of Oregon. That would be the Portland metropolitan area, Lane County, the Eugene Springfield area, and the Medford area. It does affect jurisdictions with 50 or more vehicles within their fleet, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. We have the big city of Portland here, Susan Schneider and Roger Johnson, if you would come up this morning.
Mr. Chair, do we have copies of the fiscal impact statement for committee members?
Do we have copies?
And Mr. Chair, we'll get that directly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And good morning, Susan. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning. Chair Gerard, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today regarding 2546. My name is Susan Schneider with the Office of Government Relations for the City of Portland. With me is Roger Johnson from the City's Fleet Services Office. We urge you to support House Bill 2546 today. This is a bill that passed the House last session and ran out of time on the Senate side. This bill, as your committee administrator indicated, deletes the requirement that government certify vehicle emission compliance annually instead of the same schedule as other vehicles. All vehicles within designated geographic areas are required to ensure compliance with the state DEQ standards by completing a test and certification process. This has to be done every 2 years, except that government vehicles with fleets of more than 50 vehicles must be inspected annually under existing law. The City of Portland is very supportive of the intent of vehicle emissions testing and fully cooperates with the state DEQ to provide complete and accurate certification for all designated vehicles. Realizing that clean air implications and economic value of well-maintained vehicles, we establish a regularly scheduled maintenance program providing accurate replacement of repair components by trained professional mechanics. City vehicles consistently pass the state's DEQ vehicle emission test. We understand the leadership role that government should play in maintaining air quality. However, we don't think this should be, we should be spending money unnecessarily for not meaningful results. And testing highly compliant and regularly maintained vehicles twice as often seems to us to be an unnecessary cost to taxpayers. An annual test and certification is currently required on 1,450 city vehicles. If this were changed, obviously we'd cut that in half to 725.
Ms. Schneider, could I ask you to put the microphone a little closer to you, please? Thank you very much.
I was sitting at one of these yesterday, and they asked me not to move in. Okay. I'm reluctant. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vehicles, this would save taxpayers in Portland about $30,000. These are not big numbers, but we're all looking for ways to save at every opportunity. and you've heard the figures for the state. It's not possible, there is another savings, and it's really not possible to put an exact number on that, and that's the value of the service costs associated with out-of-service time when you have a vehicle in the garage to be tested and certified. It's not out providing service to the public. And this is particularly true of things like police patrol cars and things like that. As far as we understand, DEQ does not have any concerns about this proposal. And we're also not clear how the proposal got into the law in the first place. We think it had to do with the need for government to show a leadership in this area when the program first started. And I'd be happy to, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Ms. Schneider, Representative Zoller?
Chair, how often do they change cars, buy new cars, replace them? I'm wondering why we test them at all. Because if we change cars every 3 or 4 years, it's with the new manufacturers, maybe we could save more money. Do we know how many years you have to drive them before you need to, before they don't qualify for the test?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zoner, I'm going to ask Roger Johnson.
Yep, Mr. Chair, Representative Zoner, Roger Johnson, Director of Vehicle Services for the City of Portland. We replace vehicles probably less often than every 3 or 4 years. We flag vehicles at a 9-year life. So we keep them longer than every 3 or 4 years. I don't know if that.
Yeah,
if it's where we want to be. We test every year. The suggestion here is that the public vehicles that are in the same area and same airshed are tested every 2 years.
Well, I guess, have you any statistics after driving them 3 years or 4 years that they don't pass the test? I'm trying to find out how far to shove that back, if you know.
Our vehicles pass the test consistently. I mean, we, of course, we're fully compliant, which requires certification and passing the test. But when we do test, I don't know what the exact number, but a very huge majority are fully compliant without any adjustment.
One last question. If we test it every 4 years, would we save money, and do you think we'd drop some through the gap instead of testing every 2 years?
If we tested every 4 years, it's difficult to tell. I mean, we would be we certainly regularly maintain the vehicles. The cars that we drive are serviced, regularly serviced. The normal vehicles we're talking about, sedans, vans, and pickups, are normally serviced every 8 months. And the police patrol cars are serviced every 8 weeks. So they see regularly service. It's to our advantage to keep them in proper tune, which then causes them to be fully compliant. So it's something that is to our advantage, and it's better mileage. It's a more responsive engine, and it's just a better vehicle all the way around. So they're regularly serviced.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Richardson.
This is to either one of you. Am I correct that the private vehicle, private sector, have to get their vehicles tested every 2 years?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, that's correct.
Okay.
I think we've moved to work since we
Is there any... Actually, the bill only does one thing, and that removes the fact that you have to have the compliance certification. But based on your testimony, we're understanding that you will continue to keep the vehicles in compliance even though you don't have to have them tested every 2 years.
Mr. Chair, we will have them tested every 2 years.
I'm sorry.
Okay. It just removes the exception.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you both. Is there anyone else out there who would like to testify in regard to House Bill 2546? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2546. 2546 and open a work session on House Bill 2546.
Mr. Chair.
Chair would welcome a motion, and Diane Rosenbaum is way ahead of me.
Thank you. I move House Bill 2546 to the floor with a duplex recommendation.
Representative Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2546 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Roll call, please.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Greenlight.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
Aye.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Garrard.
Aye. See, do we have a motion to move this one to the consent calendar? Since we have
moved this to the consent calendar.
Okay, Representative Greenlit moves that we move House Bill 2546 to the consent calendar. Any discussion? Seeing none. Any objections? Seeing none. We move House Bill 2546 to the floor with a due pass recommendation on the consent calendar. Okay, we'll move now to House Bill 20. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2546 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2612. Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2612, sponsored by Representative Cruz, requires cities to conduct one or more advanced public hearings regarding comprehensive plan actions and publish notice of these hearings in a local newspaper at least 10 days in advance of the hearing. Mr. Chair.
I think the chair would ask the administrator, is there a possible unfunded mandate situation here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, although I do not have the fiscal impact, this measure, House Bill 2612, does affect local governments and then, therefore could be interpreted as an unfunded mandate on local government.
Thank you, Mr. Administrator. Do you have a sign-up sheet on this one? We have two individuals signed up to testify on 2612. So go to Randy Tucker, who's out of the room. Oh, well, that was good timing. That was really good.
Some people walk out. You could have been walked in.
We're on House Bill 2612, Randy.
Okay, well, let me see if I can find my testimony.
And according to the sheet, you are
in favor.
In favor.
That's correct.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Randy Tucker, Legislative Affairs Director for 1000 Friends of Oregon. We support House Bill 2612. This is a bill that was originally put together last session, and for reasons having not that much to do with the bill itself, didn't move. Goal one of Oregon's land use program, as you know, establishes that citizens have the right to participate in the land use planning process, and specifically in amendments to local comprehensive plans. As I think previous hearings on other bills in this committee have demonstrated, that right can't effectively be exercised without adequate notice of the public hearings at which the amendments are to be considered. Unfortunately, there's currently a statutory requirement for counties to send out mailed notice of these types of hearings, but there is no parallel requirement for cities. So this bill is a very straightforward housekeeping measure that simply requires cities to notify the public before holding a public hearing on an amendment to a comprehensive plan. Now, most cities generally already do this, but there isn't a provision in statute or rule that requires cities to give notice of legislative plan amendments, especially if the amendment does not directly affect the zoning of land. And examples would be if a city is considering change to its urban growth boundary or something along those lines, and they are adopting some of the analytical components that go into that decision separately from making the decision itself. For instance, population projections or housing inventories, things like that. Those elements of a plan amendment do not actually affect the zoning of land. It's only the subsequent decision that affects the zoning of land. They help to determine what that subsequent decision will be, and so and they're often contested, you know, occasionally contested, and it's something that the public should be notified about. So that's what this bill does. The bill last session I've got here, and it's virtually identical language, and essentially what has been done this session is to break it into some sub-A's and B's and C's for easier reading. But the bill from last session is exactly the language that applies to counties, and I can provide that to you if you like. I've got it. But I just have one copy right here. Anyway, it's basically been brought straight across with some clarifying breaking up of the language so that it's easy to read.
Randy, do you have that bill number from the last session?
Yes, it's House Bill 3735. Here, I'll just hand this copy up. An issue that arose last session, and I believe you're going to hear from Linda Ludwig from the cities, is the cost of complying with this this requirement. We would argue that the cost is minimal in that most of these decisions are being discussed at hearings that are already noticed. This is essentially just adding language to the notice that there's going to be a consideration of this particular item on an agenda. At any rate, we would argue that the you know, negligible cost we think of providing this kind of notice is justified by the need to notify the public about what's going on in land use, as this committee has already discussed in other contexts. Be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Tucker, Representative Zong?
Regarding the cost, is that because of the advertising you'd have to buy in the newspaper? Do you put it in the newspaper?
Right. I think that's the only cost we're talking about here, is the cost of putting the ad in the paper. And as I said, I think in most cases there's probably something notifying people about the city council meeting or whatever it might be at that anyway.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Mr. Greenland.
Good morning, Randy.
Good morning.
Is line 13 of the bill, item C, majority of the members of the governing body approve the action. Is that new?
It's existing language in the county section of the bill. Essentially, I mean, that's not the part of this bill that I'm here to testify about, but that was brought straight across from the bill from last session. Basically, you know, action by the governing body of a city shall have no effect unless the majority of the members of the governing body approve it. It's kind of common sense, but...
Well, is it? I mean, is that a change right now? Is it? Can things be passed with a majority of those present in voting?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, I actually don't know, and if it's the pleasure of the committee to delete that line, it's, you know, that's not the issue.
That's a good thing.
Right.
I'm not objecting to this.
I don't really know the answer to your question, and that's not the piece of this bill that I am here to advocate for. But that is, again, that's just brought straight across. I'm not sure where that language ended up that I handed in just now from last session, but it's just straight across from the county section of the statutes.
And I believe that each city has their own charter, which would probably give the proper direction there, but we do have Ms. Ludwig coming up from the League of Oregon Cities, and she probably will know the answer to that. So, are there any further questions, Representative Ackerman?
Yes. I favor the bill. My concern is that if we miss any of the checkpoints here, the action of the body would not be legal. So I want to make sure that I have a clear understanding and that the record is clear about what we're doing. Suppose you have a situation where a city does not have a newspaper or general circulation. How then is notice to be given?
That's a good question, Mr. Chair. Representative Ackerman, I don't know how notice would be given in that case. But my understanding is that they already, that this mostly is done already. I mean, most cities have at least a weekly paper that comes out that's available in the city. And so I don't think there are too many places where there is no newspaper available. And obviously, We're not suggesting that, you know, a small city of 100 or 200 people advertise in the Oregonian, so.
I think, Mr. Chairman, if I could just follow up on that, I think if we would, we may have to do a little work on this, because I think when you define a newspaper as one of general circulation, that has a specific designation in other parts of the Oregon Revised Statutes. And these are papers that qualify for, because of things they have to do regarding circulation, to have the authority to advertise public notices. So, yes, we may say that a weekly is in a small town, but it may not be a paper of
general circulation
as thereafter defined. So I think we'd have to work that one out.
I think we can get a hold of the bill sponsor, Representative Cruz. Of course, being an ex-radio guy, I wonder why it doesn't say newspaper or radio, you see.
There is some provision for radio in the last line there. But
oh, okay.
it's not a requirement, though.
Okay, there it is.
Right, and I should clarify, we did bring this bill forward last session. We didn't even bring it forward this session, but, you know, we're happy that it's come forward, and we certainly support it. And I'd be glad to work with the committee on clarification of the issue that Representative Ackerman just raised, to ensure that we're not imposing some impossible requirement on cities that don't have such a an organ of public information.
Thank you.
I think it's valid.
I'd be happy to work with Mr. Tucker on that. And I just don't want the, as I said, if you don't make all these checkpoints, then the action of the body is void, and I think that's a terrible penalty to pay for technical violation. But we can work it out.
Right.
Any other questions of Mr. Tucker?
Follow-up comment.
Representative Richardson.
You know, if it said 10 days before the date of hearing in a manner that qualifies under Oregon public meetings law, then we would get out of having to tie it into a newspaper, and it would still mean that there's going to be public meeting. One of the problems with this is that if it's taken from the county, then probably the language is also taken from counties, and generally for public notice it says in a newspaper in general circulation in the county, which is a whole lot easier to do than to say just to take county out and put city in. It changes the whole burden of it.
Okay, thank you, Randy.
Thank you. I'd be happy to explore that with you, Representative Richardson, and try to figure out a way that works, because we're not interested in promoting a statute that doesn't work. So.
Thanks. Thank you. Linda Ludwig. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Linda Ludwig, representing the League of Oregon Cities. As you heard, House Bill 2612 is a retread of the current statutory language in ORS 215060, which affects county notice provisions. That language was put into statute in 1963, prior to the passage of Ballot Measure 56, which actually requires a broader notice provision to individual property owners for zone changes and comprehensive map amendments. Let me state very clearly, the League absolutely supports public noticing and the citizen involvement provisions of Goal 1. We do have some very practical concerns about the bill, which I'd like to go through with you. First question here in my mind is, what does this bill really accomplish? The bill is redundant to the current noticing requirements in Measure 56, where we are, cities as well as counties, already required to give broader notice to individual citizens. The language of the bill in Section 2, Sub 1, action by the governing body of a city regarding the comprehensive plan of the city shall have no legal effect, is absolutely too broad. Everything a planning department does is regarding the comprehensive plan. And I don't think it was the intent of the sponsor that every design review action, every setback for every single family, residential family home needed noticing, or for that matter, action by city council. Better language would be amendments to the comprehensive plan. That is not clear in the bill, and it was not clear in the county section in 215. The bill requires newspaper notice prior to the governing body public hearing. In contrast, most jurisdictions do extensive noticing at the Planning Commission level. Generally, the hearing phase comes after several months of study and meetings with neighborhoods and property owners. I'm not aware of a city or county that adopts comprehensive plan amendments without doing Planning Commission hearings prior to that action. Our jurisdictions want the broadest public involvement at the Planning Commission hearing level, and changing the notice requirement to prior to the first Planning Commission hearing would ensure the broadest public involvement early on in the process, which is the most effective both for our jurisdictions and for property owners. The bill requires notice with each public hearing. As you know, many comprehensive plan changes require more than one hearing, two, three Planning Commission hearings, and then they go on to the City Council. The cost of newspaper notice each and every single hearing seems absolutely redundant, and many jurisdictions currently mail individual notice to everyone that participated in the last hearing. Also, the time factor on repeat noticing is critical, with the requirement to re-notice that is in the bill prior to the second or third hearing. The city would have to wait probably at least 14 days before continuing the hearing on the same topic. This can easily push out our timeline, especially at the council level, running us up against the 120-day clock. As you heard from Representative Ackerman, many of the smaller cities in the state don't actually have a local newspaper of general circulation. And oftentimes, for those that do, it is only published once a week. Another problem with that 10-day window. Most city councils meet twice a month, 2 weeks apart. With ad deadlines, newspaper publishing schedules, the 10-day notice actually could mean anywhere from a two-week to probably a 35-day delay between continued hearings. We do have a concern about the majority of members of the governing body. It should be a simple majority or a quorum. And lastly, and not leastly, the fiscal impact, there is significant fiscal impact with this bill. I've been investigating some of the publishing rates across the state, and they do vary. But when you take a look at averages in terms of the amount of hearings to be published that are required by the bill and the costs, this bill would cost cities probably between $500,000 and $600,000 a year, and that is what we estimated last year as well as this year, this session again. To summarize, I'm not sure right now, when our resources both at the local level and state level are very slim, that there's a whole lot of added value to this bill that is already not addressed by the Measure 56 notice requirements. But if it's the chair's wish, I would be willing to work on some amendment language to the bill and also do a fiscal on whatever that amendment language would show.
Great. We appreciate that, Linda. Are there any questions of Ms. Ludwig? Representative Richards.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Ludwig, how extensive are the complaints that we're receiving or that you're aware of to the cities from residents who have failed to receive notice of these kinds of meetings?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, I'm not aware that there's a big outcry of complaints. Most of our jurisdictions do all they can to publicly notice these hearings, especially both at the council and planning commission level. It doesn't do our jurisdictions any a lot of good not to provide that notice. Those notices are often provided by direct mail, city newsletters, articles on large projects, information to neighborhood associations by their websites. They try to put out an awful lot of information as well as some newspaper requirements currently.
I know that's the case in Southern Oregon, and my feeling is that if the system's not broken, then maybe we could spend our time on something else trying to fix a problem that isn't a problem. So maybe that was a question that we should have asked Mr. Tucker as to whether or not there is a problem here that needs to be fixed, because there will be additional costs. And if not, then we don't need to pass more laws.
Any other questions? Ms. Ludwig? Mm-hmm. Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. we should remind ourselves perhaps that the cost here is to local government, not to the state of Oregon, but it's certainly costing somebody. Is there any other public testimony on House Bill 2612? Anyone else wish to speak? Okay, the chair is seeing none. We will, I think we'll ask the sponsor of the bill, Representative Cruz, perhaps to see if, Randy, he can work with you and Linda, see if there's any way this bill can be reworked that's not going to result in the imposition that Representative Richardson brought up. I know as a county commissioner, I would have loved to have seen the city have to face the same expenses the county does. Sorry about that.
Conflict of interest.
Right. We shall close the public hearing on House Bill 2612. Seeing that we have concluded our agenda, members, we do, Representative Richardson has an announcement.
For those of you that would like to be involved in the task force that we've had, the two committees relating to 2137, we have had the opportunity to meet with representatives of the governor's office, and we're going to go ahead and join the two committees together and have a meeting Monday at 3 p.m. at the fourth floor conference room, and you're invited to attend. Those people who are actually on these committees will get an email out to them reminding them that this has been scheduled for this coming Monday at 3 p.m. fourth floor.
Thank you, Representative. We hereby adjourn the House Committee on Environment and Land Use.
Great.
Sound.